Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for the Coach K and Joe Show. This week's guest includes Southridge great Dan O'Brien, legendary sports writer and sportscaster Jerry Burge, Pigs.com's Mike Pegram, and DC Broadcasting Sports Director Kurt Guxel. The Coach K and Joe Show is brought to you by Harmon Dental Care, Jasper Today, Idea Fusion Media, and the Willis Fence Company. Now, here's Joe Milligan and Ken Coach K Schultheis.
Hello, this is Joe Milligan once again, joined by Coach K, Ken Schultheis. Coach, are you in the Christmas spirit? Do you like that a Christmas story theme we had there?
I like that, but my spirit was dampened a little bit because Danny O'Brien, our Glory Days guest, will not be with us today, and I'm really disappointed because I was really looking forward to talking with Danny because he was a part of the original consolidation of Southridge High School and the Southridge Raiders in 72 and 73, and he was a marvelous, marvelous player. I talked with his former high school coach, Joe Todrank, who had nothing but good things to say about him, and he still holds, I believe, the single-game scoring record at Southridge.
Yes,
and several other records. So it is a disappointment that Danny won't be with us, and I hope we'll be able to get him back and have him soon because I was really looking forward to it.
Well, you know, he's a super guy. Actually, I never actually witnessed him play basketball, but since I married into the O'Brien family, I've heard quite a bit about him, and, you know, he must have just been – been something, especially in his time. I was told that if he had like a Rick Mount, et cetera, if he had the 3-point line, he'd had even more points.
Well, I was very fortunate, Joe. I got to see him play because obviously my father was coaching at Jasper at the time, and I was 9-10 years old, but going to the games, I got to see him play, and that was one of the guys that they always talked about having to prepare for. And he was a little bit, I would call him a little bit ahead of his time on the high school level. You know, Pete Maravich was coming through during that time, and most people were still playing pretty conservative basketball. Back then they would call that being a hot dog on the court, behind the back passes, through the leg dribbles, things like that. Danny was able to do all those things, and I always thought it was very exciting to watch him play. Today it would be a guy of great skill, but back then it was known as being a hot dog. But I was really looking forward to having Danny. But otherwise, Christmas is almost here. The kids, of course, are getting out of school, and I've got a house full where my studio is. So if you hear some voices in the background, those aren't tiny reindeer or elves. Those are little Schultheises talking.
Well, we also got an added Christmas gift today because the gang down at the Millhouse and Basket Case Brewery are opening up with their first offerings of beer. I do know that the Revolution Ale, and I'm not sure if it's Nut Brown or something like that as well, and I know we condone, you know, safe drinking and always have a designated driver, but, Coach, I'm going to go to the Millhouse and try one of their new beers tonight.
Well, Joe, you're certainly of age, and you have the right to do that, and I'm excited for the Millhouse. We know it's got a long tradition. Before being the Millhouse, it was the Fiesta, and it's had a long tradition of great food and great pizza, and now they're adding the Basket Case Brewery to the mix, and a couple of people involved in that, we know their family members well, so it's an exciting kickoff for them, and as we posted on our Facebook page, if you have a mug, drink responsible. Be responsible with it and enjoy the new products that they have. But also people need to remember to go to our website, CoachKandJoeShow.com. We dropped the Weebly.com or just CoachKandJoeShow.com. And, of course, Joe, I had mentioned that I was hoping to be at Hinkle Fieldhouse today, which would have been an interesting combination because Jerry Burge, one of our guests today, his father, Cyril Burge, was a longtime referee and coach and refereed the Milan game, which took place there. So But the weather prevented me from getting up there today. Michael Lewis had invited me to practice, and it would have been fun to host part of the show from there. But I'm hoping to be up there tomorrow for the Butler U of E Aces game. So we're moving right into that period of good basketball and good holiday spirit. So we should have a good show today. We've got Mike Pegram from Pegs.com. If you want anything IU to know about IU recruiting, who they're looking at, what's going on, Pegs.com is the place to go. It has been the reference encyclopedia for IU hoops and football and baseball for several years now, and Mike Pegram joins us, and we're going to be excited to have him here in a few minutes. So what we've got going today, we've got Mike Pegram coming up in a little bit. You know, right now basketball is going great. You know, Butler had the big win over IU last weekend, and of course we had Michael Lewis on before the game and on our Friday show, and he had some great insight for us. And as we talked about, we thought that Butler would be well prepared for the game, and they were. And I really thought the interesting thing, folks, was that that Butler controlled the pace of that game from really the very beginning, even though IU held a lead through most of that first half. Butler kept that pace where they needed to keep it. And several things stood out, and they were all things that we talked about off the air as well as on the air, the importance of controlling the runouts, the transitions by IU. They didn't get very many. They just did not get very many. Butler did a great job of getting someone in front of Cody Zeller and not allowing him to get out. But what the other thing Butler did a great job of was rebounding, not just offensive rebounding, but the defensive rebounding. And if you watch if Big Ten Network has a rewind of that game, because it's already considered a classic, so if they have a rewind of that game, really watch when the shot goes up and watch what Butler does. Butler does a textbook blockout. They're not watching the ball. They're not watching the ball. They're going directly to the person they need to block out, putting a hip in them, putting a little bit of a forearm into them, moving them, using momentum of their movement to get them out of position. And whether you thought it was too physical or what you might have thought, that's the way Butler had to play in order to have an opportunity to stay with IU. And as Coach Brad Stevens said, we wanted to hang around. And that's what they did, and the rebounding was a big part of that. The other thing they did was when Yogi Ferrell penetrated, instead of running three or four people into the lane to try to cut him off, they went ahead and gave him the opportunity to make the move. If he finished, he finished. If he didn't, they were there to pick up the ball. But what they did by doing that, by not sending all these people in the lane, they were able to cover Jordy Halls out on that three-point line, where other teams have been running into that lane and Yogi Ferrell's been kicking it out and leaving Jordy Halls open. That didn't happen in that game. And that allowed Butler to eliminate some of the big threes that got the momentum going IU's way. And IU, for whatever reason, athletically, they just did not control the pace of the game, and I think that was so critical for Butler. So you got to give kudos to Brad Stevens and the Bulldogs for a great game plan, well orchestrated, and they got the job done in a great game. It was a great tournament up in Indianapolis. Of course, the Hoosiers came back and won big the other night, and we'll play again tonight against Florida Atlantic. So we'll talk with Mike Pegram about that in just a little bit. Joe, you're back, we're probably ready to go to break, and when we come back, we'll have Mike Pegram on with Pegs.com, and we'll talk a little bit of IU basketball, football, and anything else. You're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Looking for a dentist close to home? Look no further than Harmon Dental Care. Harmon Dental Care offers dentistry for the whole family. Cleanings and exams, natural-looking fillings, crowns, bridges, and more. With convenient hours and a clean, modern office, you'll feel completely comfortable. Call Harmon Dental Care today to schedule an appointment at 482-1060. Harmon Dental Care, creating beautiful smiles. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year's from Jasper Today, Milligan Communications, and the Milligan family, Joe, Liz, Ryan, Reed, Reese, and Ray.
Get the
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
This is Tom Deanhart of the Big Ten Network, and you're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back to the Coach K and Joe Show. I'm Joe Milligan, and we are joined by what I'd call Mr. IU. He knows if you haven't want to know about IU, this is the man to ask, Mike Pegram. Mike, how you doing?
Hey, guys. Glad to be here.
Hey, Mike, this is Coach K. It's great to have you on because, as I was telling our listeners before this segment started, if you want to know about IU, Pegs.com and the work you've done, you are like that reference encyclopedia of what's going on from recruiting to the coaches to the players to who are we looking at down the road to what's going to go on going forward to the game that night, to the game the night before. You have a great website and you have tremendous information for the IU fan or any fan out there that's interested. Maybe IU's going to play Michigan State or Ohio State and they want to know what's going on with the Hoosiers. Pegs.com is a place to go.
Appreciate that, guys. We try to be the one-stop shop, be the resource, and then expand upon that, whether it be fan discussion or to follow the team ourselves and post-game stories and pregame and all that. So, yeah, it's been a fun ride because we've been going at it now for almost 15 years.
Yeah, 15 years, and it just keeps getting stronger. And you've created great relationships with coaches and players and former players and. And it's just really paid off. And you're gone. I mean, you're not just sitting behind a computer. You're on the road. You're going to watch recruits. You're going to watch potential players coming to IU. You're out there. You're trying to find out not just a name and a position. You're trying to find out what they bring to the Hoosiers, whether it be football, basketball, or whatever it might be.
Yeah, on the internet, you can get video. You can get audio. You can get out and cover the team in the off season. It just brings a whole different kind of media to the college sports world, and we've tried to embrace that as much as we can.
Mike, before we jump into basketball, and that's on everybody's mind, Hoosier Hoops is on everybody's mind, let's talk a little bit about Kevin Wilson in the football program, the Hoosiers on the pigskin, the gridiron. Something exciting is going on, and what maybe people aren't seeing on the outside, on the surface yet, the roots are taking, really growing and finding that foundation, and things are looking positive for the Hoosiers when it comes to football going forward.
Yeah, they've got a good stable of young talent, and what they did this season, they showed some of the seniors of talent across Indiana and other places that the ship is beginning to turn direction and convinced a lot of kids, some four-star level players that they haven't been able to recruit before. They've been able to grab some of those commitments, and what's especially nice for Kevin is those are defensive players for the most part, which has been the historical weakness. Has been the defensive line and really stopping teams. Indiana has had a lot of good skilled players, and they continue to move the ball under Kevin, who's a tremendous offensive mind. But now they seem to be building up some of the defensive talent to kind of fill in that big hole they've had.
Talking about the defensive end, I know being an IU graduate myself, we always had, like you just said, standout skill players all the way through. Even when our teams were not real strong, we'd have a quarterback or a running back or some individual receiver that had the skill to really play at a high level, but we just didn't have all the pieces. Are you a little surprised, at least from what appears to be the social media movement that puts these recruits and these different players in touch with each other, that at least what we're hearing is that some of these guys start talking to each other on the football side, on the social media side, and all of a sudden they decide, hey, you know what, instead of going here or going there, I think I want to go to IU.
Yeah, it's kind of a new dynamic that these kids both through social media know each other, and then also through some of these summer combines and camps get to know each other. I mean, that's where it starts, and then they talk to each other on Twitter. And this class, David Kenny has been really active as one of the guys in kind of pushing guys in the Indianapolis area and other places to really consider Indiana. And maybe if you get enough of us together, we can really make a difference kind of feeling among the Indiana targets. And that's what's kind of led to a group of four-stars pledging for Indiana.
Yeah, it's really interesting at how Indianapolis has become such maybe a hotbed's overstated, but a bastion of some pretty talented football players for years and years. We just talked high school basketball, but the Colts came in and it just changed the dynamic and the thought process, and these young kids grew up watching the Colts and they got involved on the football side. And there are some really good football players, young football talent in the state of Indiana, especially in that Indianapolis area.
Yeah, the problem for Indiana and Purdue of late is just a lot of those top 10 kids are choosing to go to other programs. But if they begin to turn that tide, there's huge benefits for both of those programs because there's just so much more talent than there was 10, 15, 20 years ago.
Hey, Mike, this is Joe Milligan. Got a question, a twofold question. First of all, how's Trey Roberson's rehab going? And also, where do you see, they're stacked with quarterbacks with Kaufman, Sudfeld, and Roberson. Where do you see all that playing out next year?
Well, as far as we know, Trey's in pretty good shape. He had a clean break and of the leg, which sounds bad, but it actually, you know, when it's clean, it heals a lot better. And, I would still say that because of that, he has a chance to be pretty healthy for enough a period of time to maybe go in as a favorite with Cam Kaufman and Nate Sudfeld, because he just brings a different element of the run to the team. But it's going to be a fun competition to watch as we move into, you know, the spring and the summer. I would still say Trey just has something, an intangible that's really hard to describe until you watch Indiana play. But he makes good decisions. He can run the ball. And Indiana still always had a little bit of trouble with the offensive line blocking, and that's why a scrambling QB has a little extra benefit in Bloomington.
Hey, Mike, my counterpart, Joe Milligan, brings this up quite a bit, and we might as well jump back into the Hoosier basketball and the recruiting side of things. And this is one of the questions that have come up several times on our show through the first couple months, and that is the over-recruiting. And I'm not asking you to give an opinion right now. We know that Coach Crean has just done a tremendous job of recruiting great talent to come to Indiana, and he's right up there with the Calipari's and the Krzyzewski's and those other guys in bringing that talent in. But it seems like there's a lot of questions, marks going up. You know, we've got all these young guys, young talented kids that want to commit or committing, but do we have the scholarships available? Just without putting yourself, making yourself committed one way or the other, what are your thoughts? Is this something new, or is this just something that we're seeing because Indiana's got a little bit more interest in it as far as talented kids? Is the over-recruiting question something to be that people should watch or be concerned of, and are kids going to get maybe burned a little bit committing to programs where there's no scholarship available or potentially no scholarship available?
Well, you know, Coach Crean has been really aggressive on this, more so than we've ever seen at Indiana, and pretty much more aggressive than we see across programs of this size or across the Big Ten. It worked out last year, though it came down to, you know, the fall decision of what happened with Ron Patterson. This year they've gone to three over signings, which is very unprecedented. But at the same time, in this particular team, you do have at least, I think, three guys that have a lot of NBA potential, at least two seriously in Cody Zeller and Victor Oladipo, I think, is a much better NBA prospect than people understand, and probably the MVP of this team thus far this season. And we're getting a lot of feedback from NBA scouts and so forth that they really like him. You have some injury issues. You know, Maurice Creek has just had his fourth injury since arriving, and you've always got the possibility that somebody will leave, and generally that's at least one regular attrition kind of type transfer a season. And there's always a backup plan. Maybe it's an in-state kid paying his own way or something as a very last resort. It is going to be interesting and to watch how it works out this year. But, you know, there's a plan A, B, and C, and D. But it is kind of unprecedented territory. It's always, you know, it's been difficult for us and myself and Jeff Rabjohn to kind of address the question because there is no straight answer. But it has always worked out. And in this case, I think I don't know if they really planned it over signed by three, but the last kid that signed or committed, I should say, is Noah Vonleh, is a tremendous talent, a top five kind of player. And it's really hard to say no, and then just you know make things work out.
Well, I'm not going to belabor it because I know this is going to come up. We get questions about it all the time, and you can't say no to somebody like Vonleh. I mean, he is just tremendously talented. I mean, is this a situation where a coach has to go back and talk to a couple of these recruits and say, you know, things have changed. We got to look at the plan B or plan C. If you want to come to IU or otherwise, we opt out or you can opt out. Or I mean, are you up front with these young men as somebody like Vonleh comes on, or do you just go along and hope for the best?
Well, that could be one of the last resorts, but I don't think they want it to expect it to come to that.
Yeah.
It's. You know, you can always have a kid go to prep school for that extra year or have him reevaluate whether the Indiana is the right place for him. That happened a couple years ago with David Williams, a kid who committed and just didn't appear to be good enough. But that wasn't really a question of numbers back then. You know, it's that could be, you know, plan D or what have you in the whole scheme of it. But you know, it's just they have a plan for it, and we'll just see how it works out. And but the NBA and a normal attrition, I think, would be the first ways of tackling it.
You know, Mike, you talked about some of the individuals and their NBA potential. You know, playing at the next level, and I've got to agree with you. You know, first of all, we know Cody Zeller is something special. He's got areas that he will improve on, but he's just a special player. He runs the floor like he's a small forward. I mean, he just does so many good things. Personally, I'd like to see him take center stage a little bit more when he's out there. Hey, this is my floor. This is my team. Not shooting-wise, but just directing the traffic, touching that ball and kicking out. But Victor Oladipo, his quickness maybe as good as I have seen in years and years at IU. His spin move, my gosh, that spin move leaves you standing there wondering where the guy went. And, I mean, can you just talk just a little bit more? And you touched on it, but Victor's quickness is really at a level that maybe we haven't seen.
Yeah, I can remember some of us on press row of the Sweet 16 last year watching Indiana, Kentucky, looking at each other and said, the one guy that Kentucky cannot handle on Indiana is Victor Oladipo. He's just amazingly quick, and, you know, he's got good size, 6'4", 6'5", and really has improved his ball handling and developed some of those spin moves that you're talking about. When you add how high he can jump and just how quick he is, even Brad Stevens after Saturday's game was just in the press room, took time to say he really had never seen anybody that gets the ball up that quick and maybe the most athletic player he's really run across. And that's why I think he's, you know, as long as he improves his jumper, which he's beginning to show, and in fact I think he hit one or two threes on Wednesday night, that's really the only missing piece. And he's got a terrific personality. He's a high-energy guy. I mean, you run into guys with athleticism, maybe good height, but they just don't have the X factor, and he really does, both in terms of mental toughness, mental energy, and he's really been coached well at the math. You know, the DeMatha program is renowned across the country as being one of the best, and so he's really, I think, prepared to take his game to the next level.
Mike, we have a question from a listener. His name is also Mike, from Ben Sins. He wanted to know. He said he wanted to ask that Yogi Ferrell. He always knew that he could drive with the ball and et cetera. But is his 3-point shot something he's developed or something he's always had?
Well, Yogi actually is somebody who hasn't shot the ball as well as we thought he would do. He's actually been had some really good shooting games as young as I can remember, maybe at 15, 16. I've seen him, you know, rack up maybe 4 or 5 threes in a game and really dominate. You know, he really scored a lot from the outside for Park Tudor. But a lot of kids have a little trouble making an adjustment to college when they don't have as many shot attempts. But Yogi, I think, has shown in the last game or two that he's starting to get a little better feel for the college game, and he has pretty good range on his jumper. What he's always had that's kind of unique is a mid-range pull-up kind of shot, which is kind of a lost art in today's game, but he's been really well coached. I don't know if you run into a point guard that's been as well coached as Yogi, and maybe Jordan Hulls was really well coached, but that's one of the unique things is that these two kids are so well coached that they score in mid-range shots, and their assist-to-turnover ratio is just off the charts for Indiana this year because they're so well-schooled and have good form in their jumpers like we're talking about.
You know, last week we had Butler assistant Michael Lewis on, and we talked a little bit on the air and off the air about Yogi, and one of the things was he had not shown that he had found a rhythm on the perimeter. And they knew he could drive, but he'd not shown yet that he was consistently finishing. So that was one of the things they wanted to instead of letting him, attacking him and kicking out and getting Jordy and a few of those guys some easy threes and kickoffs, they were going to look for him to make him finish a little bit more. But I thought the interesting thing was, I agree with you 100%, Mike, he looked like his footwork was off, his rhythm was off from the perimeter, but against Butler, it looks like he found a little bit of that, and I'm sure that hopefully he's going to continue to build on that. But I agree with you. Those guys come in. He's trying to be a passer. He's trying to run the offense, and I'm sure shooting wasn't the very first thing on his list, but it's starting to come along, as is another young man on the Hoosiers. Tell us a little bit about Remy Abel.
Remy has been a big surprise. You're talking about a kid who didn't come in with the high rankings. I don't even think he was in the top 150 when he committed or signed with Indiana. And a lot of people are like, what is Indiana doing adding a player at this late stage, especially when they, you know, the numbers are so high. But he's just a kid that is a really tough-minded, you know. A year ago at this time, he hadn't done much through the first 10 or 11 games, just had seen limited minutes, I think. His best game at this point had been 5 points. But something clicked with him early Big Ten season, I think it was a game at Michigan, if I remember right. And since then, he's just been a big part of the team. And he's kind of filled in the Verdell Jones minutes that were, you know, given with his graduation. And this year has really become a pretty good outside shooter, which was always the question mark. Remy's strong. He can guard people. He's pretty good, athletic. The best part of his game is he can drive the ball really well. He's begun to finish better at the basket, and just his shooting. I don't have it in front of me, but it's really, really high for a guard. I want to say 60% or close to it, if not over. It just yeah, he's 59.1%. You know, for a 6'3 guard, that's tremendous. He just really good shot selection, and he's become a one of the best 6th, 7th men in the country right now.
I agree with you, Mike. I mean, to watch him, to watch his progress and growth as a player and maturity as a player from last year to this year has been so interesting as a former coach. And he, his shot is, it's dead on. It's great rhythm. It's great follow through. He looks pretty solid. One of the guys that, and I may be wrong statistically, but he looks like he's kind of up and down, and that's Watford. He looks like at times that he's throwing the ball, that his stroke is you know, he doesn't have the follow through that maybe he has some peaks and valleys with, but he's kind of throwing it right now. Is he hurt? Is he just trying to find where he fits in with this group? I'm not saying he's not playing well or he's not an important part. He just doesn't seem to be clicking on a consistent basis like he did last year.
Yeah, but even last year he went through these spurts of 5 to 10 games where he was really on or really off. And that's, you know, that's Christian Watford. He's a little bit casual. He's a little bit he's not the energy guy of a Victor Oladipo. And I think sometimes that leads to him not really getting into the rhythm of the game. And he just has these 2-for-9 games that just, you know, leave you perplexed when you watch how he can shoot it, he can post, he can do a lot of things. He can spin the ball, he does a lot of things, but he does struggle. His statistics from shooting from inside the three-point line are really not very good this year. Like mid or low 30s, and that's just not, you know, for 6'8 plus player, that's, you don't see that. But, you know, he did hit at least 3 threes on Wednesday night. He does shoot the ball pretty well, from the three-point line this year, but he is finding trouble. One of the things is he has trouble going over people. He just doesn't jump really high, has his shot blocked quite a bit, and just hasn't found his rhythm yet this season.
Yeah, and the interesting thing about him, Mike, and you may agree or not agree, he appears, I think a lot of people think he's a great jumper, but it's because he's so long. He's so long that he appears to have this great leaping ability to get up over people, but his arms, he's just so long that he just plays a little bit bigger or more athletic than he may be. Hey, I just really appreciate you being with us, and our time's going to run short here, and I wish it wasn't because I could talk to you for the whole 2 hours because you have so much insight. But I do want to touch on two things before you go. One, a lot of people make the comments about the schedule, pre-conference schedule.
Yeah.
And I really felt like, this is me personally, I can be wrong 50% of the time anyway, I really thought that bit us a little bit against Butler. I thought Butler came out and played an emotional, physical basketball game. And I'm not sure that we were ready. I don't want to say ready for it, but I think it kind of shocked us how physical, maybe some of the players, how physical they played. And they were able to control, basically, the pace of the game. Did the schedule have anything to do with it? Or was just Butler just that much more ready emotionally and just things fell right for him that night or that afternoon?
I thought the schedule may have been an impact. I mean, I thought Indiana was in control of that game to a certain extent, holding 5 to 7 point leads for a while. But when Butler got ahead in the, 5 minutes to go or whatever, in the second half, I think there was a little bit of panic in Indiana's the eyes of the players and so forth, and that lead for the Bulldogs shot up to 7 right away. And I think at that point in the game, if you had played a lot of good teams and been through some up and downs and with the lead, you might have been able to keep things right even and not been in a situation where you had to scramble to push the game into overtime at the end. I think making quick adjustments within a game, a better schedule might prepare Indiana, because I think that they need to make a few more adjustments, because Butler did try some things that teams hadn't done against Indiana yet this year. And been successful with that, obviously. So, I think the schedule will take care of itself because the Big Ten is so tough. It won't be an end-of-year issue, but I do think it could have been an issue on Saturday, and maybe it could be an issue in the first couple Big Ten games.
Yeah, and you're right, Mike. I mean, it is December. It was a December 15th game, and it's not the season right there. Last thing before we let you go and end the segment, let's talk a little bit about some of the players down in the southern part of the state. Of course, Bossy High School, Jaquan Lyle. Have you been able to get out and see him several times, and your thoughts on him?
Yeah, I've seen him many times. I was there this year for the Jeffersonville game, and that he was tremendous. Had a great duel with Daryl Baker in every game since then. He's played exceptionally well, given the stats that I've seen.
Yeah.
And he's a tremendous talent. You could see it even as a freshman. He's just one of the best passers I've ever seen come out of the state, and he's become more athletic and can score a lot better than he used to. And so he's really stand out. I really like the Duncans at Harrison. They're all really well-coached kids that play with tremendous basketball instincts. All really good shooters, and really got a good chance to watch a lot of their play this past summer. So those are the guys that stand out to me down there, and I really would like to make that the game between Harrison and Bossy. I don't know when it is, but that's going to be a tremendous battle.
Well, I hope you can. I'll go ahead and make sure I get you that date, and if you're down here, I actually live in Evansville, so I'd be happy to come out and watch the game with you, but I will tell you that I agree with what you're talking about on Jaquan Lyle. The guy can pass. I mean, where most guys have to extend that arm to make that pass, his wrists are so strong and quick, he just shoots that ball out of his hands so quickly. And believe me, he has, one of my questions on him has been his shooting ability. He has certainly shored that up. He's had no problem shooting the ball. He's jumping over people and dunking the ball in the last seconds to win games. I mean, he's turning into a special player. So, Mike, it was great to have you. I hope that you'll join us again. You certainly have just one of the great websites as far as if people want to know what's going on with IU. You've got the place to go, Pigs.com. We're just glad to have you, and we wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Coach, I appreciate it, and same with you, Joe. I'm glad to be back.
All right, we look to have you coming in the future. You're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Thank you.
Does your website work for you? Your website is an employee. You wouldn't continue to pay an employee that didn't do his job, so don't pay for a site that doesn't produce results. Whether you don't have a site yet or want to improve an existing one, Josh at Idea Fusion Media can help. Want your site to be found easily on search engines like Google? How about growing your business via social media like Facebook? He can help with that as well. Idea Fusion Media, web design that works for you. For your free website review, visit ideafusionmedia.com. That's ideafusionmedia.com.
There it is, the holy grail of Christmas gifts, the Red Ryder 200-shot range model air rifle. And there he is, Red Ryder himself. In his hand was the knurled stock of as coolly deadly-looking a piece of weaponry as ever I had laid eyes on.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back on the Coach K and Joe Show. I want to give a quick plug real fast. Coach K, Josh Houchin at Idea Fusion Media is one of our sponsors, and he's running a contest right now that if he had 150 likes on his Facebook page, by Christmas, he would give a five-page website free designed to a business or nonprofit organization that enters the contest. And you got to like the contest on the page, and then also you got to like the page, and that's at www.facebook.com/IdeaFusionMedia. So I don't know if we're eligible or we probably would have entered. What do you think?
Well, I think it's great that Josh is doing that, and people really need to take advantage of that opportunity. You know, Josh is a avid listener of the show and supporter, and he does a great job when he does some play-by-play with the Gook on Raider basketball. So, yeah, man, support these people. You know, the one thing, Joe, that I think people – this is really our listeners' talk show. I mean, it's their show. And you know, I talk to people, and they say, oh, I listened to your show, loved it. You got great guests. Wow, that was really neat. And I say, call in. And they're like, oh, I don't know if I should. Call in. Send your question in. Participate in the show. You know, Mike Pegram, he gets it. I mean, he was – everything he was talking about was spot on. He was right on. You know, sometimes these guys start these recruiting websites, these information websites. They're not really following the stuff. They're just copying off other people. You know, Mike gets out there, and he goes and watches these players and talks to these coaches, goes to these games, and he's in there talking to these people. And almost everything he talked about, well, everything he did talk about, was spot on, Joe. So, man, we've had some great guests and great shows, and I'd sure like to get more people involved in calling in and sending us questions, because it really is their talk show.
Yeah, and, you know, coming from a Purdue guy, you know, he puts together a quality website and something that, you know, a rabid fan base like IU wants, and he does a great job with it. Hey, I was this week, I was looking over Facebook and saw, of course, I'm friends with our friend Tom Deanhart, and he had an article this week about the compensation of football, the football teams in the Big Ten have for their assistant coaches. And, of course, Northwestern doesn't release theirs. But, you know, at the top of the scale was Ohio State at 3.29 this past season. At the bottom was Purdue at 1.61. And IU came in at $2 million. You know, it was kind of interesting to see, you know, these numbers. For instance, IU's defensive coordinator, you know, and their defense hadn't been – oh, wait a minute. Oh, they have two – they have co – defensive coordinators. Mike Eckler makes $306,000 and Doug Mallory makes $306,000 and their offensive coordinator makes $255,000. Now, Seth Littrell, you know, Seth might need to get a pay hike above those defensive coordinators. What do you think?
Well, you know, I think the big thing comes back, Joe. You got the haves and the have-nots, and I'm talking about the good staffs and the players and the programs that are winning and the fan base, they're spending money. I hate to see this much money spent on amateur athletics, but if you put the money out there, you get the quality people that you need, and it seems to move into success for these programs. I mean, Ohio State, Michigan State to some degree, more years than not. Northwestern, I don't know what they're doing at Northwestern, but I tell you what, whatever they're doing the right things with that football program. So I think Purdue and IU, they need to kick it in gear, or they're going to continue to stay towards the bottom.
Well, guess who is second last? Purdue was last, and Indiana was third last, but guess who's second last?
Oh, man. Minnesota?
No. Now you know why Brett Bielema left. He is second
last,
$1.77 million. Yes. And as far as offensive and defensive coordinators go, we've got their defensive coordinator makes $260,000. Actually, their offensive and defensive coordinator made about $260,000 last year. In comparison to IU, paid two defensive coordinators $306,000.
Well, you know, I'm not saying that that's not good money or big money. It is. It's more than the vast majority. No, than 98% of the people in the country make. It's a lot of money. But I'm a little surprised, especially with Barry Alvarez running that program. He understands more than anybody what it takes to get quality people and put a quality program out there.
You know, and switching gears here from football to basketball, really excited. Next week we will start having Jerry Palm. That's right, Jerry Palm's the CBS.com bracketologist we all look at to see where our teams are going to play. Of course, I won't be looking this year because Purdue won't be listed. He'll be on, and he'll be a regular contributor. And what do you think about that, Coach K, for our little
I'm excited, Joe. The guests we're having are, you know, as good as anyone out there in what I call the bigger markets, whether it's the, you know, Dan Dockett show or even some of the ESPN programs. We've had guests and subject matter that rival or are better than any of them. So, I mean, if you want to hear about sports and you want to hear more than just what you read in the sports page, this is the place to come to. You know, from Tom Dienert to Mike Pegram to Scott Rowland to Mitch Stetter to Michael Lewis to Jerry Palm. I mean, and that's not the end. We're going to have some other great guests coming up as well. You know, the other thing I might mention is 100 years of Jasper basketball is going to be celebrated on January 5th at the new KFC building on the north end of Jasper. Slick Weber, Kevin Manley, a number of other guys have gotten together to make this an event, to bring back as many of the people who contributed to Jasper basketball over the last 100 years, from players to coaches to managers to statisticians even those who were cheerleaders are welcome to come back. And I'm proud to say that my family, from my dad through all of my brothers and myself, have been a part at least 40-plus years of that tradition at Jasper High School, and a lot of it very successful. So want to remind our listeners, if you are a former player, a former cheerleader, former stat person, trainer, manager, coach, whatever your brother was, your sister played basketball, whatever it might be, get on the website, 100 Years of Jasper Basketball, let Slick Weber know, and plan to attend on January 5th at the KFC. It should be a fun, fun event.
And for you Purdue fans, also next week, there's a very good chance. Well, Purdue will be playing in their bowl game next Friday as well, but there's a very good chance we'll also be having the color man Pete Quinn on the Coach K and Joe show next week to discuss Purdue Boilermaker football and the bowl game. So,
now that'll be pretty awesome. And, you know, coming up in the next segment, we have Hall of Fame broadcaster Jerry Burge. But before we do that, I have to bring this up, and I know – I'm going to make some people mad, but, you know, I was thinking back to the IU-Butler game, and it was the third thing that I wanted to ask Mike Pegram about, but I felt like we were running short on time, so I could only ask him two. And that was in the overtime against Butler, and Clark Kellogg, who I think is a great announcer. Some of the things he comes up with, not just the color part is awesome, as well as his analysis, but when they went into overtime, Butler missed the shot, and again, Farrell had hit the shot earlier, and he said it was over, that Butler had its chance in regulation, and it was over. And obviously, you know, my comment on the show was Butler would be better prepared, but IU would probably win because of depth. And when you go into that overtime, Joe, I mean, that's what you figure. I mean, Butler's got three guys that foul out, Andrew Smith, and I mistakenly called him Adam last week, and my son got all over me, Andrew Smith. He was out. Jones was out. Farmer was out. And yet Butler finds a way to win, which is a testament to the players and the coaching staff. But the one part that kind of bothered me, and I know we'll have some IU fans that agree and maybe some that get mad when I say this, was I really questioned Coach Crean taking out Zeller and Watford towards the end. They were in a situation where a game was tied. IU wanted to get the ball. He went with his reasoning was a quicker lineup. It's not that I don't agree with a quick lineup, but to take both of your big people out concerned me. First of all, I thought you leave one in, and I think you leave in Cody Zeller, and you put him on the ball. So it's difficult to get the ball in. It's difficult to find the easy pass. And you let Oladipo and your quick guards defend that entrance of the ball. And maybe Zeller forces the guy to take a little off the pass or to pass it wide, and Oladipo or somebody gets in the passing lane and gets a steal. Secondly, when they took it down on the other end and Barlow couldn't find the option he wanted, Butler did a great job of spreading the floor. They went into the 1-4 baseline look. And, Joe, you know from my time coaching and even when I'm working with these younger kids, I love to go with that 1-4 baseline set. It spreads that defense out. I knew without Cody Zeller or Watford in the lineup, didn't have a big, what I call a big, to come into the lane and help. And if Zeller has shown us anything all year, it's that he does a great job of getting into the lane and creating the question mark or altering the shot or forcing that ball to be put up differently than he would have liked. Now, Barlow makes an incredible scoop shot anyway to score, but I sure would have liked to have seen Zeller or Watford in the lane to help. And you might have said, well, if they'd have come over to help, then they would have kicked it off. Not necessarily. If IU's doing its job and rotates its defensive people, when Zeller comes over to help, the outside man rotates, and at worst you force a three instead of an easier shot underneath. So I wanted to get that off my chest. Feel free to send me your comments or text Joe and get on me. But I thought it was a mistake from the standpoint of not taking one of the bigs out, but taking both of the bigs out.
Well, you know, I'm a Cody Zeller fan. I of course, Coach Crean knows better than I because I don't go to the games and usually don't watch a whole lot of IU. But he just, I don't know. For some reason, I have the feeling the kid could guard a point guard if he wanted to, because he's just as far as flaws go, I've not seen a whole lot. The only flaw I can see of him is maybe he doesn't scream at his teammates sometimes and says, "Hey, remember, I'm on the court. I'm the National Player of the Year. Don't forget about me." So,
Joe, you make a great point, and I think it's one that a lot of analysis is being said, made on, and the point is that Cody needs to be a little bit more forceful on the court. You know, I was talking with several coaches the other day, and we were talking about the importance of him being seeing that ball as many times down the court as possible. We're not talking about taking all the shots, folks. I'm not talking about throwing the ball to Cody and let him just shoot it. I'm talking about Cody touching that ball to pull the defense into the post and then him being able to kick out, whether it's in the same direction or kick opposite or to take the ball to the basket and draw the defense and kick out again and see that ball get reversed and maybe kick back into him for an easy shot or put him in a position on the shot to be backside boards. Butler did a great job of putting a body on him when the shot went up, putting a body in front of him when he got the ball. They made him work. And Michael told us before he went on the air that was one of the points of focus they had was we felt like Cody was getting a lot of easy putbacks, a lot of runouts, that no team had really said, you get on Cody, you stay on Cody, and you disrupt his flow. And they had the perfect guy to do it. Andrew Smith, 7-foot, senior. He's been through the wars. He understood how to do that. And it wasn't that he dominated Cody. He just made Cody work a little harder, not get the easy shot, have to think twice about it, kick it out, maybe not where they wanted it to go, and it disrupted the flow of the game. And anybody that's played the game or coached the game, they understand what I'm talking about. When you have that rhythm, it becomes so much easier. But when you lose that rhythm, it's plodding. You're just plodding along, hoping for the best. So it's a good point, Joe, and it's a point that a lot of coaches out there are talking about that we saw this last year. I think you even brought it up earlier in the year. He's got to be he's got to make his presence known a little bit more. He needs to be more forceful out on the court with his presence.
Yep, he does. Well,
hey, so we got Jerry about ready to go, or?
Yes, he's ready. He's ready.
Okay, do you want to go to break and bring him back, or?
Yeah, we'll go to break. We were just waiting for you to get off your little rant there. You know, we're waiting for you to take a breath. In other words,
here's what I'm going to let you do since it's Christmas time. This is my gift to you. You get to say you're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Okay, you're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Hey, this is Coach K. Want to get the word out about your business? Well, team up with the Coach K and Joe Show and form a winning marketing team. We've had over 5,000 listeners through our first three shows, and we can help put your marketing dollars to work 24 hours a day. Through our live shows and our 24-hour available podcasts, your marketing dollars can work for you around the clock. So give us a call at Milligan Communications, 812-630-2449, and we will help your marketing dollars to score for you. Happy holidays. Coach K here, and from my family, Janet, Josh, Paige, and Scott, to your family, here's wishing you a very Merry Christmas. And yes, Christmas includes Christ. He's the reason for the season. And have a blessed new year.
In the heat of battle, my father wove a tapestry of obscenity that, as far as we know, is still hanging in space over Lake Michigan.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
This is Tom Deanhart of the Big Ten Network, and you're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back on the Coach K and Joe Show. We are honored, and I mean honored and excited, to have legendary sports writer and sportscaster Jerry Burge with us. Jerry, how you doing today?
I'm doing great, Joe, and hello, Ken. And, you know, the word legend is used rather loosely. I use it when you get so old. You get so old that few people remember you. That's when you get that tag. But, you know, I do thank you for coming on. I enjoy listening to you and Kenny on your podcast, and I just think you do a great job. It's a real asset for basketball in Southern Indiana.
Well, Jerry, I got to tell you, I was so excited when Joe said you were going to join us, and you got the great booming voice, as we just heard, and in my mind, guys like you and Bob Simmers were God rest his soul, the ultimate in radio and sports broadcasting. You know, we have Walt Ferber, who does a great job, but when I look back in my younger days, the Jerry Burge articles and the booming voice and Bob Simmers poetry in motion calling Wildcat games, you guys are something special. When I look back, Jerry, you know, you not only had a great Hall of Fame career as a broadcaster and a sports writer, but you were a pretty fair basketball player for the Wildcats back in the 1950s.
Now, see, the good thing is not many people are still alive that remember when I played. You know, it was so many years ago. But I happen to be blessed. I was on a good basketball team. I had four outstanding teammates and one heck of a coach in Nip Wukner. And we had fun. You know, we won the sectional, you know, our junior year and our senior year. We won the regional our junior year and our senior year. One thing people might not realize up there, as a group, they called us the 5 J's because we had all five of our first names started with J that played at Jasper. It was Junie Schneer, John Huffman, Jim Eckerly, and Jody Geisler, and myself. But we had a distinction that I think is rather unique. We played, we figured it up one time, 10, 15 games in the Honeyburg Gym, and we never lost a game there. We played during the regular season. We played in the holiday tournaments. We played in the sectional. We played in the regional. And we never lost a game in the Honeyburg Gym. Coach Wukner used to call it our second home. It was our home away from home. But what a great facility that's been for basketball. But when you guys called and said, you know, you'd like to be, you know, asked if I'd be on the show, I got thinking of Jasper High School basketball. And I just think how blessed I was to be able to play the game, to write about the game, and to broadcast the game. And, you know, it brings back some great memories. Kenny, you be sure to say hello to your dad for me, one of my favorite coaches that I've ever covered. And, Joe, I have to pass some good wishes on to you from my twin daughters, Marlene and Marilyn. I think you were classmates of theirs.
Yeah, well, Kenny was, too. And Kenny was, too.
And Kenny,
actually,
too, yeah.
Marilyn actually Facebooked me to tell me she's listening live and wants to tell her daddy hello.
You know, I was beginning to wonder, Joe, if we were going to get on the air when I heard Kenny go in a while ago.
Come on, Jerry.
I thought you might run out of time.
Hey,
the
key is to listen to when he takes a breath and then try to start right then, because he has to breathe sooner or later.
Hey, no, nobody can spin a story like Jerry Burge. And Jerry, I'm going to jump back in. I also talked to Marcia Burge quite a bit on Facebook. She's a wonderful person down here. But, Jerry, we're both from big families, and you had a big family, and you had two wonderful parents in Cyril and Nets. And I can tell you, just when I was came back to Jasper coaching, and even before that when I was at Washington Catholic, Nets just was a wonderful lady and would always take the time to help me out and do things special for my team that I wanted to do. And not a machine, she cut it out by hand. And I can always remember over Christmas when Cyril was still with us, dropping by his house on Fifth Street with John Lori and some of the guys, and just talking with Cyril about his old days as an official. And if people, or some of our listeners don't know, Cyril was an outstanding official on the high school and college level, and also officiated the Milan Championship State Finals game, correct?
He sure did. He did the championship game in 1954, and, you know, he got a lot of notoriety. I always kidded him and Bobby Plump whenever I'd see him. I'd say, you two have milked that better than anything I've ever seen, you know, having played in and refereed the Milan Muncie game. But that was great. I mean, that was probably the most memorable thing in my dad's career. But a lot of people don't realize he's in the Hall of Fame, in the Indiana High School Basketball Hall of Fame, but not as a referee. He's in because of his play as a high school basketball player. He was an outstanding high school basketball player. I only wish I could have been half the player he was, you know, but he was outstanding. He earned a scholarship to Purdue University, and because of illness wasn't able to go, but you have to be pretty good to get a scholarship to Purdue.
Now, Jerry, a comment, and then I got a question. I don't know
okay.
if you had a chance to. Hopefully Mick passed it along to you. I have a magazine called Jasper Today, and actually Cyril was our Jasper icon in November, and Mick wrote the story and did an unbelievable job with it. And then also we have a YouTube video of the month, and also there was a Cyril Burge tribute video that someone in your family had put together, and we had used that too. So if any listeners would like to you know, to know a little bit more about Cyril, hey, go to jaspertodayonline.com and click on the November magazine cover and read a little bit more about Cyril, because he was one heck of a guy. But I also have a question from you from a loyal listener, John Bots Magic Bador, asked me,
okay.
said that you and Bob Simmers, two legends, as far as Jasper.
But I'll be careful when you ask a question about Bob and myself. Okay. there are some things we cannot talk about, but go ahead. You are a family-oriented broadcaster, aren't you?
Yeah. We're not governed by the FCC, so.
Oh, okay. Careful. I'm scared to death now. Go ahead and ask.
He just wanted to know one of your special memories of working with Bob.
Some of my special memories working with Bob?
Yep.
Oh, my goodness. I said, I just can't. I'll tell you, it's a group of things, but every year for many years, Bob and I would leave Jasper on Tuesday night or early Wednesday morning. We'd go to Indianapolis for the entire weekend for the state tournament. We'd be there from Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, and come home on Sunday. And it was just an incredible week, the two of us. We'd go up. We were on expense accounts, you know. Jack Roebuck would shake his head when I turned mine in, and Earl Metzger would shake his when Bob turned his in.
Uh-huh.
But they were really good about it. They said, hey, guys, go up there. You know, you had a long winter covering basketball. Go up and have a good time. But Bob and I spent every moment of every tournament together for, 10, 15 years. And and I think back in answer to John's question, memories of Bob, there are so, so many. And probably, unfortunately, the one I remember the most, I gave the eulogy at his funeral, and it was probably the most difficult thing I ever had to go through, because I lost a dear friend, and the community up there in Jasper lost a great talent. I mean, Bob was outstanding. He really was.
Well, he was. And you know, Jerry, when I went back, he was there. Still, as I became, was hired as the Jasper basketball coach, and I remember him coming out to my father and mother-in-law's house, which he lived just across the street from Larry and Shirley Bartley, and he came out to congratulate me. And he also told me that he was, you know, going to be leaving the profession, and it was just devastating to me, because I really was thinking how neat it would be to be back with Bob, even if he was a little critical at times. On the coach, but how great it would be to work with him because of such a wonderful job that he did and a great flow and understanding he had of high school sports, and the same with you. And Jerry, I might mention that one of the reasons I wanted to talk with you was you talked about you and Bob going up for the state finals. You know, a lot of people don't realize, and I do, even though I was a young guy, I read your columns and would listen to my dad talk a little bit. You had gained a lot of influence through your friendships and your time and your work throughout the state. So when you talked about Jasper basketball or a player at Jasper or a player in the area, you were able to carry a lot of influence with other sports writers and broadcasters throughout the state.
Well, it's nice of you to say, Kenny. And, of course, you know, I was very active in the Sports Writers, Sportscasters Association. One thing I did do that I was kind of proud of, I got a call one year late in the basketball season from the coach at Springs Valley High School. And they said, you know, we got a ball player here named Larry Bird, whom I covered and seen play quite a bit in high school. They said, we were afraid he's not going to get on the Indiana All-Star team because he's from such a small school and from southern Indiana. He said, could you do anything to help me to make sure he gets on the team? And of course, I think I was president of the Sports Writers Association at that time. And I did. I contacted everybody in the state. I sent them letters. I sent pictures to the newspapers. I contacted all the radio and TV stations, and I told them all about Larry. I gave all his stats and everything. And Larry did get on the All-Star team. I think he would have gotten on without that. But I've been given credit for doing that, so I'll go ahead and take it anyway. But since then, I've been around Larry a few times, and he is actually – he laughs about it now. He says – well, he says, yeah, all the stuff, you got me on the Indiana All-Stars. And he said, I owe you one, Burge. He said, I owe you one. He said, if you ever want a favor. And I'm still holding that back. I'm trying to maybe bring him down here to Owensboro for a Boys and Girls Club meeting someday. But Larry always brings it up. He says, yeah, I know, I owe you one. So, and there are a couple of books on Larry Bird that have been published, and I mentioned in them. And that makes you feel real good, you know, when maybe some little extra effort that you did was truly appreciated. Kenny, you mentioned your dad a while ago and Simmers and myself. I got to tell you a story that you may or may not be aware of. We were playing at either Jeffersonville or New Albany. I think it was at New Albany. It was early in the season, and we got beat, Jasper. I'm saying we. I'm covering Jasper games, and Jasper got beat by New Albany. And we had a weak spot. We had a weak spot at guard, and we really needed another guard. And down in the dressing room, Simmers and I ganged up on your dad. And we pulled him aside, and we used to jive back and forth, you know that. And we told Ed, you know, Ed says, well, he says, you know, they beat us in the backcourt again. And I said, we both looked at him, and we said, Coach, you can solve this problem so easily. Bring that kid up from the JVs. Bring him up from the kittens. And he looked at us and he said, I don't know. And I said, yes, bring him up. We said, don't penalize that kid because his name is Schulteis. And he was the best player on the B team. He was the best player on the B team, and he should be playing varsity ball. And in all respect to your dad, Ken, he told us, he said, you know, he said, I could really get criticized for that, you know, bringing, you know, the sophomore up when, you know, he hadn't played any varsity ball and put him right in there. It'd be nepotism and all this. I said, heck, the heck with nepotism. If I was a coach, I'd play the best players I've got. I don't care who they are. And I said, the best player you've got at guard right now is Jimmy Schulteis. And he said, you think so? And I said, we both told him. We said, Coach, if there's any static on it, we will really campaign for you on this. And he brought him up. And you remember the rest of that season. We had one heck of a ball club, and it was directed by your kid brother. And we like to think maybe we played a little role in that. But, you know, it was really neat that, you know, your dad was humbled by it because, you know, he didn't want to, you know, rub anybody the wrong way by bringing his youngest son up.
Well, you know, and that's true. And that was something that he always worried about. But you guys, I mean that, Jerry. When I said you had a lot of influence, I can think back to when Manley and Weber were playing in the early 70s. And, again, I'm just a little guy. I'm 7 or 8 years old, but I'm listening to everything. Because from the time I could think about it, walking in that gym, I was going to coach basketball, and I just thought it was the greatest thing in the world. But you were able to get – we had 2 5'10" guards on a good day, Weber and Manley, and you were able to get the state of Indiana to think that Jasper had one of the greatest guard duos ever. I mean, they were good players, but, I mean, you just had a great way – to relay information and a story to people, And just like you're doing right now with me, I'm caught up in it. I'm saying, man, this guy's just, he's got to be right. I mean, you just really did a great job with not just writing a story or broadcasting a game. You really took on responsibility or caretaking for the kids you covered, the teams you covered, and you tried to promote them throughout the state.
Well, I was born and raised in Jasper. I was really blessed. I was able to play basketball there. You know, some of my earliest memories involved Jasper High School basketball and the Jasper gym. You know, my dad played there. And then, you know, when I was just a little kid growing up, I learned about the 34 Jasper team, you know, that my dad was on and went to the state tournament, got all the way to the Final Four. And, you know, and then as I got a little bit older, I just kind of knew that I'd play basketball for the Wildcats. There was no question about it. And, you know, and then when I did, you know, I was fortunate to play on a very good ball club. And I just, all of my memories from the day I, you know, the first day I can recall back when I was 4 or 5 years old, all the way up to now, involve very much Jasper High School basketball. You know, one thing I do miss you guys, since I've been gone from Jasper almost over 25 years now, a quarter of a century, but one thing I do miss is sharing with people either in the paper or on the air little trivia things about Jasper basketball, and I'm going to throw one at you here, Kenny and Joe, that I know you won't know the answer, neither one of you, but there might be a few people that remember this. The question is, when and why when New Albany Bulldogs ran onto the floor in the Jasper gym, did the Jasper fans stand and cheer? Then you understand the question. New Albany's Bulldogs ran onto the floor pregame, right before the game started, and the crowd stood and cheered just briefly.
Huh.
What happened there? And I think it's just a neat bit of trivia because nobody, I don't think, remembers this. It'd be interesting if anybody listening remembers it and they could call you and let you know.
Now Jerry, when did this happen?
Okay, I'll give you a hint. It was in 1949. It was late in the season in 1949. Jasper had a very mediocre team. New Albany ran onto the floor and the crowd cheered and then they quieted very quickly because they looked at the players. And what had happened, New Albany, when they arrived that night, their equipment manager didn't load their warm-up jerseys into their gear. So they borrowed Jasper's warm-up jackets. So when they ran onto the floor, here it said Jasper Wildcats on it, and the crowd cheered because here came Jasper, you know. And they looked around for a minute, and they thought, wait a minute, this isn't Jasper, you know. And they realized it. But, you know, I was a kid. I was at that game. I was only in the fourth grade. But I remember we saw it coming out, and we cheered, and then, wait a minute, that's not Jasper. But that's just a little tiny bit of trivia. And, you know, the great thing about it, as mediocre as that 49 team was, you know, it was the first team with 9 losses ever to win the state, that game they won. They defeated a real good New Albany team by 1 point, and then they lost their last 2 games of the season before going into the sectional. But that is a significant game because Jasper, that was probably their best game of the year, no question about it. They beat a good New Albany team, but New Albany warmed up with Jasper on their jerseys, and so did Jasper. But I think that's just a neat little bit of trivia. And those are the kind of things I do miss, sitting around talking old Jasper basketball, and not just Jasper, Huntingburg. Danny O'Brien, by the way, was one of my favorite players that I ever covered up there. And, you know, I was lucky the years I worked there. I had guys like Mike Leaguers and Tom Nicholson, Wayne Bailey, Mike Ballinger. And I had one heck of a coach to cover in Ed Schultheis. And, Kenny, I'm not just saying that, but people don't realize, you know, they all talk about Cabbie and the Cabbie gym. Who is second only to Cabbie O'Neill in total career victories as a coach at Jasper, sectional victories, 5 in a row, 5 sectional wins in a row. Nobody's come close to that other than Cabbie. And, you know, Ed was one of the most outstanding coaches Jasper had in a long, long, long lineup of great coaches that Jasper has had over the years. But the top two that stand out really on their own are Cabbie O'Neill and Ed Schultheis. I called him.
And Jerry, you know, you talk about that list, and you got to be around a lot of them. And I got to spend a little time with Cabbie when I came back to Jasper and coached. And he'd take me out to the golf course. We'd play 3 holes. Of course, every putt within 25 feet was good. And it was a joy to talk to him. But tell our listeners a little bit about Nick Wootner, who you played for, and a Barney Scott who came along and did a great job. Dad was his assistant before he he would move up later on. But Nip, you know, to me, I never got to know much about him as a coach. I saw the pictures. I saw his records. But he always just seemed like such a good man. Tell our listeners a little bit about what it was like to play for the coach and the man, Nip Wootner.
I'll tell you, you know, Cabby O'Neill was one of the most colorful coaches ever to coach in Indiana. Nip was a very, very good coach, but was kind of low-keyed. He was a very easygoing guy. And Nip was just a delight to play for because he coached under Cabby for many years. And there were some people through the years that would say, you know, Cabby would not be Cabby without Lewis Nip Wootner. And then he was the obvious choice to take over as head coach. At first, I was a little disappointed that I realized I would not have a chance to play for Cabby because he retired just before I got into high school. But then Nip was there, and Nip had some great success. I mean, he had a team that was ranked, I think, number two in the state for a long time in 1955 with Donnie Bates and that crew. But Nip was a good fundamentalist coach. I mean, we worked on fundamentals. We were so small. My senior year, I was the tallest. I was barely 6'4", if I was 6'4". And we used to out-rebound teams regularly. We weren't the fastest team, but we were so well-coached. We used to run a fast break, Kenny, and you can appreciate this as being a coach. What we strived for when we ran a fast break, we got the rebound to scoring, we never wanted the ball to hit the ground. And there were many, many times when it would never touch the floor. And that was
wow.
Nip. Nip was such a fundamentalist. I could out-rebound. I wasn't a very good basketball player. I know that now. But back then, we played Terre Haute Gerstmeyer when they had Charlie Hall, went on to IU, and Howard Dardeen went to UK and then at Indiana State. Sam Smith, Newton, and Green. They were huge. Their smallest player was as tall as I because I was, you know, 6'4", and their shortest guard was 6'4". We out-rebounded them in the semi-state. I out-rebounded Hall and Dardeen, and they
wow.
were usually like 6'7 and 6'6". You know how you did it? With positioning. We played a zone so we could get great positioning, and that was Nip. Nip told us that. He said, look, all you have to do, you're not going to out-jump those guys. They're going to, you know, they're going to kill you. Get positioning. And he was
that was the difference in the Butler IU game the other night or the other afternoon.
That's right.
They're blocking out. They're not watching the ball go up. They're getting positioned. Jerry – That's an awesome testament to Nip as a coach. That's pretty neat. That really is.
And he was one of the nicest guys, I think, that ever lived. He really was. We had some nice people, you know, in Jasper, and some great people that were coaches, you know. Nip was one of the greatest. Your dad was he was a class act. And Nip was that way. I don't think I ever heard a bad word said about Nip Wootner. Nip was, and he was a family friend. You know, he and his wife were good friends of my mom and dad's. And, you know, he was just he was great to play for. We'd be up at the state tournament and hanging around with him a little bit because they'd always take the players up there, the coaches that would come up to him. And there was so much respect for Nip Wootner. And he doesn't get the credit. He really doesn't. He doesn't get as much credit as I think he should get as being one of the great coaches at Jasper High School.
Now,
you
know,
guys had back-to-back 20-win seasons, two semi-states in a row. Barney Scott has back-to-back 20s.
Yep.
Ed Schulteis had them, and we didn't have them again until I was there. I mean, when you can do that with your teams, you've done something, and you were a part of that, and Nip obviously did a great job. Did you have a chance to work with Barney Scott at all when he was here?
Yeah, we were here. I was in Jasper when Barney came there, and Barney was just, he was the first, quote, outsider to come in since Cabby, you know, and Cabby came in 39, and then after Cabby, all those years, we had Nip, and then all of a sudden, we get, you know, Barney in there, and Barney really, I mean, he kept the good tradition of Jasper basketball going, and you don't realize how close we came to going back to the Final Four when Barney was here, when we got beat. I think it was by Tell City in the semi-state. And that was just, Barney really gave us a lot of thrills. And he had some great players, too, though. You know, he did. One thing I used to get a kick out of, I used to get critics. And, you know, your dad, I had many critics in Jasper. Your dad had critics. You know, Cabby even had critics. But people would say with Ed, they'd be talking about Coach Schulteis, Ed Schulteis. And they would say, yeah. I said, he's won 5 sectionals in a row. My goodness, he's won a couple of regionals. And they said, yeah, but he had the good ball players. And I said, wait a minute. I says, do you realize how many coaches there are that have the good ball players that don't win? And who made them good ball players to begin with? You know, well, okay, you know. But, you know, that's, you know, you mentioned a good one there with Barney Scott and with, you know, with Ed and, you know, Cabby and all of them. They were just great coaches. They really were. We've been blessed.
Now, Jerry,
we even had another
show.
Hey, Joe, we had another Schulteis that did pretty good, too. Okay.
You know, we had, you were talking about good players that Ed Schulteis had. Well, we've got one on the line. We've got Slick Weber. Slick, you with us still?
Yes, I am, Joe. How you doing today?
Oh, Slick, how are you?
Good,
hey,
Jerry,
one of my
favorite
guards. He had. I don't know if you, Joe, if you and Ken can remember. Slick had one of the goofiest shots you ever saw. The way he'd hold that ball kind of behind his head, and he'd fire it up from anywhere on the floor. But man, would it go in! He was an exciting ball player to watch.
It was a two-handed push shot, and I used to call when I was teaching shooting. I'd call that thumbing. But he had shot it so many times, Jerry, that he could drill that thing. And even after he was out and he'd come back and play pickup ball in the gym, he'd pull up at that 30-foot mark and just launch that thing and hit him almost all the time. He really was a great shooter.
I hate to think how many points you'd have, Slick, if they had the three-point shot back then.
Yeah. Your guys' memories are going bad as you're getting older. I don't think I was that good, but that's okay. Hey, Jerry, I just wanted to thank you as an ex-Jasper player during that era that you and Bob Simmers, as Kenny was speaking about earlier. I always thought you were very fair in your sports writing. I remember one time we got beat my senior year by Evansville Memorial. We just got beat by Lagodi on our home floor, and we turned around and got beat by Memorial. And your first paragraph of the article said, Jasper lost last night like 77-70 in an appalling display of basketball. Well, that's about what it was.
Well, what you just said, Slick, is what it was. And I'll say this, and I hope Ed Schulteis is listening. I remember the first time Ed was talking to me, and he says, boy, he says, you know, I don't think that was fair. You said we looked horrible when we played at Evansville Bossy the other night. And I said, wait a minute, Coach. I said, wait a minute. I said, how did you look at Bossy the other night? He said, well, we looked horrible. I said, you know, how did you look at Tell City? Well, we looked great. I said, what did I say? He said, we looked great. So, you know, that's the thing, and you got it. You hit it right on the head, Slick. You know, you hit it right on there because, you know, that's, you know, I like to call them what, you know, what, call them what they are, you know. And, you know, it's tough sometimes. You know, you do, people don't appreciate it, baby.
But I did. I thought, yeah, because I knew when we stuck and when we didn't. Boy, I could always open up that paper and go, yep, he's right again. But anyway, I just wanted to thank you. And also, Jerry and Kenny and Joe and everybody, I'm really looking forward to January 5th. I know, Jerry, you're going to be there, and I expect you to tell a few of those stories and what have you. So it should be a great
time.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, I want to clear something up. I did not play in that first team 100 years ago, okay? We go back pretty far, but we don't go back. We go back over a half a hundred. You know, we go back a few years, but
yes,
we don't go
do.
All the way back there. We don't.
Well, we're getting some old-timers back here. I think Jack Patton and Chick Hollis and some of those guys are coming back. Unfortunately, some of those older guys can't do the travel like they used to, and they're down in Florida because they're rich and basking in the sunlight. But that's okay. We're going to have a good turnout, so I bet we'll have 60 to 80 old basketball players, probably 150 people. So it should be a good time.
I'm looking forward to that. By the way, you know, I have a son down in Nashville, and we've been down there for Vanderbilt football and basketball games. And a guy named Jack Heldman, who was one heck of a ball player at Jasper.
Yes, he
graduated in 1948, and he's a legend in at Vanderbilt. And you're almost a legend, Slick. They still talk about you down at Vanderbilt, at Vanderbilt gym.
No, I know that's not true.
I won't tell you what they talk about, but they talk about it. They really do.
I tell you, I've had the great privilege of calling some of these old greats from Jasper basketball. I've had great conversations, Jack Heldman being one of them, Mickey Sommerstein, Bob White's coming.
Great.
Bob White is coming. You know, some of these old legends that I grew up hearing about, and I'm talking about 45 minutes to 1 hour conversations on the phone. They just love Jasper basketball. And, Kenny, I did get a hold of Farouk the other day. And he says there's not a day that doesn't go by that he thinks about Jasper basketball and how much fun that was and how blessed he was that he got to come to Jasper, Indiana. And I thought,
well, you know, Slick and Jerry, no matter what people think, and I know when I went up to IU as just a student and then I went to Washington Catholic, they would always say, you know, when they wanted to get on me, they'd say, oh, you're from Jasper. You think Jasper's the best place there. And you know what? I used to look at him and say, it's pretty darn good. I don't know if it's the best place ever, but it's pretty darn good because the people took pride and gave the best effort, and Jasper basketball is special, and it's still special. And it's still special to me, and I know it is to you guys. So that'll be fun on January 5th.
Kenny, I'm going to let you talk to Jerry. I just wanted to thank Jerry and take a few minutes of your time. So I look forward to you guys. Hey, everybody have a Merry Christmas, okay?
Thanks, Slick. Enjoy talking to you. Boy, I think that's great what you guys are doing up there, all of you, having that anniversary get-together January 5th. I think you're going to be more than that there. I think you're going to have a lot of people coming in at the last minute. You're going to pack that place. It's going to be fun. It really is.
Well, you know what I hope, Jerry, is some people bring their video recorders and their iPhones and record some of the conversations, because the one thing, you know, I was a history teacher when I was teaching and coaching, and one of the things that I learned, and that's why I love to talk to Cabbie and I love to talk to former players, and once those people are gone, you lose the great, rich history, not just the score and the record, but the history of the individuals and what it was like to play for them. And that's why I asked you to talk a little bit about Nip Wootner and Barney Scott. You know, a lot of people don't, they've seen the names, they see the records, but they don't get to really know what the person's like. And that's why it was important to have you on our show, and I hope you'll come back. But we're not going to let you go yet. I got a couple more things. Players. You know, I was really fortunate. I got a coach in kid named Michael Lewis, who went on to be the career assist leader at IU, leading scorer in Jasper history. Scott Rowland played for me. He's one of the top scorers, and you know what he did in the major leagues. I played with Mike Ballinger when I was in high school, and he was one of the great scorers and players. I got to grow up watching Brad Vogel play with Jim and your brother Bob, who was their age, you know, running around with all those guys. But I really missed the guys before that. I was right on the cusp of Wayne Bailey, but I don't remember a lot about Wayne Bailey. But I know from what my brothers tell me, my dad, just a great player. Some of those guys through the 60s, you know, right up into that early 70s period, there was a lot of great players came through Jasper High School.
Well, certainly the whole Leaguers family, you know, there were five boys there that were outstanding. Mike Leaguers is one of the best big men I think that ever played at Jasper. Wayne Bailey, he came along late in his career, set the school scoring record one night at the Jasper gym, got a NCAA Division I scholarship to Texas Arlington. And, you know, he was just an outstanding ball player. Tom Nicholson, I don't know how much you remember about Tom. Tom Nicholson, he was an incredible jumper. I mean, he could jump. He was only like, you know, 5'11 or 6 feet tall, but he had jumped center. He could rebound with, you know, people, you know, 6'6", 6'7". He ended up playing college ball in Delaware. Tom was an exciting ball player. There's no question about that. Of course, you mentioned Mike. You remember Mike Ballinger. You know, Donnie Bates, he goes back in the 50s. Donnie Bates in 55. Donnie was one of the great ball players. My goodness, he played at he went to Vanderbilt. He went to Florida State. He went to Texas Wesleyan. So Donnie got around. They all liked him. You know, they liked Donnie. But Donnie was the first outstanding ball player. I got to tell you a little story on Donnie. We played at Logansport at the Berry Bowl. And I wasn't on the varsity. And in fact, I was on the JVs, but they didn't take the JVs up there. So, you know, we didn't go. But my dad refereed a game in northern Indiana, so he dropped me off in Logansport, and we went to the game, John Hoffman and I did. And we're watching the game, and they played Logansport, and the place was packed because he was, oh, my gosh, he was an Indiana All-Star. He was just an All-State first team and everything. But the way the game started, I've never seen this happen, and this would be a good one to close things on here if you want to wrap things up. Donnie was playing for Nip Wootner. You wanted a Nip Wootner story. Donnie was playing for Coach Wootner, And at the start of the game, there was so much hoop over him. He said, "This is such a big game, guys," he told him in the huddle. Charlie Beekline jumped center, always controlled the tip. He was a great jumper. He says, "Tip it to Donnie." He said, "Donnie, you get the ball and keep it and take the first shot of the game and score, and we'll set the scene and set the mood for this ball game." He said, "Okay, coach." So this is a true story. You won't believe this. They tipped it, and it went way in the backcourt, back around the other free throw line. Donnie gets it. As soon as he got the ball, he was between the free throw line and the center circle. He got the tip. He shot it from behind the line, turned around, and ran the other way without looking back, and it went swish. And you talk about a crowd going nuts. Now, if he missed it, I wouldn't be telling the story today. It's no big deal if he missed it. But he made it. He made that basket, and the crowd went wild. And he also often talked about it. He said, did Nip even complain? He said, "My gosh, why did you do it back there?" He said, "Coach, you told me as soon as I get the ball to shoot it." So he did. Donnie was a little, he was a little bit off center plumb, a few bubbles off. But he could play basketball. And was it that game he had 30-something points going into the fourth quarter. He fouled out, and we lost the game by 1 or 2 points.
Oh.
But Donnie was one of the best. Donnie was probably the best, I'm trying to think, in my terms of covering ball games. Mike Leaguer's broke all of his records, I believe. And then eventually Ballinger, when I was there, set all the school records. And all-around ball players, there are three that I had the pleasure of covering. Mick Stemptonogle, I don't know if you're familiar with Mick. Mick Stemptonogle was one heck of a good football player and basketball player and baseball. Jimmy Wenzel.
Great athlete.
Will remember him. Jimmy was, he was, the Kansas City Royals wanted him to play baseball. He ended up, he was a great basketball player. He was one heck of a punter in football. In fact, he ended up punting at Indiana University. He led the nation in punting at Henderson Junior College down in Texas and then came to IU and finished up there. He was a great all-around ball player, but perhaps the best. And Scotty Rowland, of course, because of his baseball and basketball, but I don't think Scotty played any football, especially later in his career. But one of the best all-around, without a doubt, would be Mike Ballinger. Mike, I still think, could have been Purdue's quarterback. He could have.
Yeah.
He had a scholarship to Purdue. He would have, stepped right in there and been a Big Ten quarterback. He went to UK, went to Kentucky, and then over to Western Kentucky and played college basketball. And you know what? He was a pretty, he was a good football player, basketball, and baseball.
Baseball, he could throw it.
Three sports.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, he was an outstanding. So that was fun, Probably the most – I was there for 15 years covering sports for the Herald, and before that I broadcast games on WITZ for a number of years. Without a doubt, I have some of the greatest memories of Jasper High School sports, and I was just lucky to be at least a tiny part of it. And I'm looking so forward to coming up there on January 5th and seeing a bunch of the old-timers. There might be a few there even older than I. But you guys, I got to tip the hat and pat you on the back, Joe and Ken, for doing a great job with this program that you run every Friday. I enjoy listening to you.
Well,
Jerry, I think Joe has one more question, and then we'll wrap this up.
I have a question. The person that texted to me said that I wouldn't ask it, but we do ask whatever questions come in.
Okay.
The question is, Jerry, did Coach K and Joe really play sports, or are they just big talkers?
No, I kind of remember when Kenny played, but I sure don't remember when you played, Joe.
I'll tell you what, that's okay. Send your comments. Jerry, it was great having you, and I hope you'll come back, because I think throughout the time we'll maybe have some pinpointed subject areas that I would love to have you weigh in on. And so would you come back and join us in the future?
I'd like to come back sometime and spend the whole time just talking about Cabby O'Neill, if nothing else. I could tell you more Cabby stories that would take the whole show. But I do have to say one thing. I meant to, when we first started talking, I was going to say greetings from the Commonwealth of Kentucky, home of one class basketball. Need I say more?
Yeah, and you know what, Jerry? We're going to bring you back and talk about that, because that still pains my heart, and I'm fortunate that I got a coach into the last year of one-class basketball.
Oh, you did. I didn't realize that. It's a big difference. There's no question about that.
Well, Jerry, thanks for coming. I can't wait to see you again on January 5th. My dad is listening to the show, and I'm sure he had a great time listening to you, and he'll see you on January 5th as well. So, I mean, you
Merry
just
Christmas
did it.
To all of you.
It's great to hear you because one more thing. I'm sorry, Jerry. One more thing. What did you enjoy most? Did you enjoy writing or broadcasting? Which one did you enjoy the most?
I'll answer it this way, and I think you'll understand it. You know, I spent 15 years, you know, writing and covering basketball and all sports, you know, football, all of them. And I didn't spend that many years, you know, broadcasting. I was back in the, you know, late 50s and early 60s at WITS, but then when I came back, I ended up mostly in newspaper. In answer to your question, for the last 25 years here in Owensboro, I have been so fortunate. I do high school football and basketball on TV regularly. I do high school or Kentucky Wesleyan football and basketball. I've done radio. I'm still doing TV, and I'm still doing some radio play-by-play. I enjoy play-by-play on radio more than anything that I've ever done, and it's what I think I do well. I think I'm a pretty good broadcaster. I really do. And I hope you take that the right way. I think I'm a very good broadcaster. I was a very mediocre writer. I know that. I admire people that could really write, and I wasn't a good writer. I know that. I knew what to write about. I couldn't write that well, but I think I can broadcast as well as anybody, and I enjoy it. God gave me a good voice, and I have a love of the game, and I still do. And it's because of coaches like you, Kenny, and some of the ball players I've had to watch. It's a labor of love. I love broadcasting.
Well, I think
that
you did.
Your question?
Yeah, but I think you did both of them exceptionally well. Jerry, thanks for being with us. We wish you and your family, your enormous family. Believe me, I know what it's like for being from a big one. We wish you guys Christmas and a Happy New Year.
You know, Jackson Street's never been the same. When they had the Birch family, and two blocks down, they had the Schultheis family. There were so many kids running up and down that street. They did. We even got cats from each other, remember? And dogs. We got
dogs and everything.
Oh, man, we won't even – hey, that's another subject we could talk about, because we had a dog that was his own grandpa, is the way it turned out through the breeding between the Schultheises and the Birch with those dogs. They were the craziest dogs. They were as crazy as Kenny, so you know they're kind of weird. But Merry Christmas to all of you. It's been my pleasure. I've enjoyed it. Have a great holiday, and I'll see you on January 5th.
Got it.
Sounds good.
You're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Looking for a dentist close to home? Look no further than Harmon Dental Care. Harmon Dental Care offers dentistry for the whole family. Cleanings and exams, natural-looking fillings, crowns, bridges, and more. With convenient hours and a clean modern office, you'll feel completely comfortable. Call Harmon Dental Care today to schedule an appointment at 482-1060. Harmon Dental Care, creating beautiful smiles.
Does your website work for you? Your website is an employee. You wouldn't continue to pay an employee that didn't do his job, so don't pay for a site that doesn't produce results. Whether you don't have a site yet or want to improve an existing one, Josh at Idea Fusion Media can help. Want your site to be found easily on search engines like Google? How about growing your business via social media like Facebook? He can help with that as well. Idea Fusion Media, web design that works for you. For your free website review, visit ideafusionmedia.com. That's ideafusionmedia.com.
Merry Christmas and Happy New Year's from Jasper Today, Milligan Communications, and the Milligan family, Joe, Liz, Ryan, Reed, Reese, and Ray.
Fragile. That must be Italian.
Well, I think that says fragile, honey.
Oh, yeah.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back on the Coach K and Joe Show on our regular last segment, the radical section. Coach K, Kurt Guxell, and Joe Milligan. What's up, guys?
Hey, Joe, what's happening, Coach? Glad to talk to you again.
Hey, you know, that fragile, I always thought it was fragile, too. I missed when she said, I think it's fragile. I just went around for years calling that a fragile. Jeez, you burst my bubble, Joe.
Oh, sorry. Sorry about that. Hey, Gook, we saw pretty physical game and on last Saturday, but also saw that, you know, Southridge has got a pretty dang good squad, don't they?
Well, yeah, they took Jasper out of some stuff that they like to do. And, again, it's the same old story with Jasper. They have trouble scoring, and when you can't score, you're going to have trouble winning games. But a lot of people want to talk about how bad Jasper played. But Southridge, they did a little everything that night. They pressured the ball, turned Southridge over, and any game that you have Ben Weber playing in, you have a pretty good chance to win. And he took over late in that game, had a huge game with four threes, and pull-up jumpers off the glass, and had the rest of the guys around him play well, too, and that's a good mark of a nice player. So, yeah, it was a good night for Southridge.
You know, on Tuesday night, Kurt, they hooked up against Springs Valley and Jim Jones, and I came down to the game at historic and wonderful Memorial Gymnasium. One of the reasons was Coach Jones, obviously, one of the premier coaches in the history of the state. I also coached against him when I was at Jasper, but he was the first to hire me to work a basketball camp when he used to oversee the administrative side of the Larry Bird basketball camp. So I want to come down and see how things went with him and also get a feel for this Southridge team. It was interesting to watch them. They'd like to change up, do different things. They remind me a lot of the Southridge teams that I played against, coached against. They've got some long, lean bodies, long arms, get into passing lanes, good perimeter shooters, hustle. I think you hit it on the head last time we talked. They try to play the game the right way.
Well, I thought it was very interesting because we were waiting to see maybe, and even Coach Roush, how this team would come back after the Jasper game, because it was very emotional. And at some point in that Jasper game, they were taking a lot of threes and not playing good time and score. So right off the bat, I don't know if you – obviously you noticed the coach, O'Brien, the 6'7 kid, they ran him off some baseline screens, some curls in the lane. He scored 13 first-quarter points. A lot of it was inside before he stepped out and hit four threes. So, you know, they kind of, you know, got back on track, if you will, after that Jasper game with something that they tried to fix from the Jasper game. So I thought that was very good for them. And I was just trying to get your impressions on Southridge after you saw them. And I know Springs Valley, they're learning some things under Coach Jones. But I thought Southridge did all right shaking that Jasper game off and moving forward.
Oh, I thought they did a really good job. And, you know, Kurt, Tuesday night games are tough, especially when you're coming off a big game like Southridge was. I really like O'Brien as a player. I think he's pretty versatile. I think, you know, his best basketball is coming ahead of him. I thought one thing that I liked that they did was they started in that full court pressure. Valley was able to score a couple, three times off it. But Southridge didn't give up in what they were trying to accomplish defensively. A lot of times you will see teams give up a couple of quick buckets, the coaching staff panics a little bit, the players panic a little bit, and they go away from it. And the thing about a press, the thing about pressuring on the full court is sometimes you're going to give up layups or you're going to give up the open shot. The key is to put the other team in this false sense of security rhythm where they think they're going to be able to continue to shoot quick shots and score. And what ended up happening is Southridge just chipped away and got him a nice lead. And much to Valley's credit and Coach Jones's credit, they worked their way back in the game. But it really was never a threat throughout the second half. The one thing I did notice, Kurt, and again, Tuesday night games are tough, it looked like Southridge relied more on their size and ability to just rebound. I didn't see a lot of blockouts on their part. But, again, it could have been a Tuesday night game. I don't see any way they could have beat Jasper without blocking out against those big bodies. So that was the only thing I noticed. Southridge didn't seem to get a lot of physical blockout. But otherwise, they got a nice team, a very nice team.
Well, you mentioned that blockout, and this is how the season evolves tonight. They may need to do so with Tyler Walsh of Modern Day. This will be their big test tonight. This will probably be the best team that they have played so far in Modern Day, who knocked off perhaps one of the sectional favorites, Perry Central, getting them their lone loss. So any team that can do that is going to be a good opponent for Southridge tonight. And with Walsh in the middle, that will be their first big test with a big post player that they'll have to defend and on the same token have to block out.
Yeah, and again, they've got a nice team, and they'll have some tough games coming, but, boy, they got some size. They've got some athletic ability. Ben Weber plays at one level, and that's all out all the time. They can shoot all. I mean, they literally at one point, but several times in the game, they put five guys around that arc and said, "Hey, you know, we're gonna do some back screens, some shuffle cuts, and if you give us a look, we're gonna put it up." And they did, and they hit it. And it's nice when you've got that kind of scoring potential from that 3-point arc where you can put four or five guys out there and they hit that shot.
And a lot of Jasper people, they were miffed that the big kid Masoner stepped out and hit a couple against them. But if you watch Zapparish play on a nightly basis, he will do that. He's the big football guy with a nice touch. He shoots the three well. He shoots free throws very well, too. And he hit two more against Springs Valley. So that just gives them added offense off the bench. And you mentioned what I like to see Zapparish do. I love that late game spread game. They don't use it to stall or delay the game. They use that as a kind of an offense with those cuts through the middle. And that, you know, nobody likes to play defense more than 30 seconds, if that much. But they break teams down like that, and I like that. And I think that's just another thing that they can do with their talent that they got. And, I just like Coach Roush and the way he puts together a team.
Well, I got to talk a little bit to Heritage Hills Coach Matt Sisley, and I know Du Bois and different teams were there and got to kind of get some input from them. But I think everybody walked out of there thinking – Zapparish has a nice group and definitely are going to be a tough team to play. I think the key is when that three's not falling, are they prepared to do the other things that they can do? And that is make those back cuts, get the ball inside, and work that paint a little bit more. But I think that they'll probably definitely get to that point. Kurt, let's switch gears a little bit. Let's just jump into the pro football NFL. Colts have a big weekend coming up. Get them a win at Kansas City, and they get in the playoffs. Their head coach, who's been out all year, he's battling leukemia, I believe. He's been cleared to come back and coach. A lot of things going on for the Colts emotionally as they go into this game on the road.
Right, I guess Pagano's coming back on Monday, and this is a game that they – have to get, or not have to get, but it's a big game for them. The Texans were awfully good. We've seen how good they are. But this is a game that they should be able to take care of. Kansas City starting the great Brady Quinn at quarterback. So if they don't take care of this one, they might have trouble in the last week against Texas to try or Houston to get back into the playoffs. But they should be all right in Kansas City. But then as you say that, any road game in the NFL is going to be tough. But you know, it's outdoors in the elements. The Arrowhead's always a tough place to play. But if you're looking at it as the better team, Indianapolis should be able to get this one.
Yeah, and I think there's no doubt that when you look at that team and how it's developed on both sides of the ball and just the maturity and the composure and the poise of Andrew Luck, I'll be honest with you, I thought – he would do a good job. I thought he would get hammered this year. I didn't think the line would hold up, and I thought the Colts would be lucky if they were 500. So all the way around, you got to give them a lot of credit, and you really have to say with everything that's gone on and with everything that was new and not new, Andrew Luck has really shown some poise and maturity in a position that's just tough to be in.
Well, and I like the GM Grigson. He brings all these new players in and tries to revamp this team and does. I know it's easy to start with Luck, and that's a great place to start, but the way they played, then you're dealing with the coaching situation with Bruce Arians taking over as an interim guy, and you know you've got to have solid leadership in that locker room when something happens where an interim comes in. I mean, they could have ran in several different directions, but they rallied around Arians, which, you know, when a substitute teacher walks into class, it's mayhem most of the time. But with Arians taking over, they had some guys in that locker room say, "Hey, we're going to do this. This is the plan that Chuck Pagano has. This is the culture that Chuck Pagano laid, and we're going to play like this, and we're going to conduct ourselves like this." And they played for Arians, who probably shouldn't be the interim coach of the year. He should be the overall coach of the year. And then you got Grigson, who put this all together. I mean, how can he not be the executive of the year? I mean, it's a great story, but all the way from the front office down to the players, it's been a great run for the Colts, and, I mean, it's really neat, especially for Arians, because it's not easy to take over for a friend, the guy that hired you, and then keep everybody on track. He's done that.
Well, and it definitely has, and we can see what some of the changes the Colts gain has been kind of a Pittsburgh Steelers loss, so to speak, in what how their season's going. But, of course, Peyton Manning's gone out to Denver and just done a tremendous job. And I know they had some pieces in place as well, but to see what he was able to do with his offensive pieces from the first few weeks to this point in the season, I mean, he just methodically has picked people apart. He really is a surgeon in the operating room when that football gets in his hand.
Oh, he's unbelievable. I mean, just and he's a detail-oriented person, and that goes a long way. And if you're trying to teach kids how to play quarterback or trying to play point guard or being an infielder in baseball, you can't gloss over details and expect to be good. And if you would look at Peyton Manning or Andrew Luck, that's exactly what they do. They pay attention, and just the little things makes a big difference on how they approach and how things get done.
Little things, little things, little things, and I can't stress that enough. And I know that a lot of times when you've got your players don't quite understand that, and fans maybe don't realize, but it really is the little things. And that leads me to the Butler IU game. Just some. We don't have to belabor it. We know what happened. Butler came in well prepared, and I would say that the little things were being done by Butler. Not that IU didn't do them, but Butler did all those little things. Everything fell into place. Guys had the games of the year up to that point for them. What are some of the things that stood out for you or to you in that Butler IU game?
Well, first of all, I didn't think Butler let Indiana get out on the break, either against misses or makes. I mean, that's a big part of IU's offense. We talk that from time to time. They want to play fast. But Butler, whether it be getting on the boards themselves with an offensive rebound, which they had 17 of them, or if a shot goes up, let's get a guy back. I mean, and that's different for each coach how they do that, whether the guy that's furthest from the basket gets back or somebody just rotates out of the offense back defensively. I thought them not allowing the transition game, and again, Butler taking some things away from Indiana that they like to do. I mean, everybody's on Cody about, you know, commanding the ball or getting open or them finding Cody. But you know what? Butler had five guys out there too, and they practiced the week before too. And they have a good coaching staff too. I mean, could Cody get better? Yeah. But Butler was out there to win the game too. And that's what at the end, as an IU fan, I was not ready to jump off the bridge like some people, because that's what happens when two good teams play. I mean, it's not Florida Atlantic every night, you know. Sometimes you play a good team, sometimes they win.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, we had Mike Pegram on earlier in the show, and his comments were very similar to yours, and thought maybe that, Butler just brought something to the game that maybe IU hadn't seen in several games, and just they weren't ready for someone to come in and challenge them for who's going to dictate the tempo of the game. You know, IU's athletic ability had been so good up to that point that they dictated. But Butler had some things go their way, but they were prepared, and they were able to slow that game down. And as Brad Stevens said, we just got to hang around, and that's what they did, and surprisingly won it in overtime. Back to the high school level, Kurt. Looking at the teams around the area, of course, we've talked about Southridge. We've talked about Jasper in past shows. Who else out there that you've seen or been hearing about? Who's some other teams in the immediate local area for people to look at?
Well, you touched on seeing Coach Sisley scouting the Southridge game, and nobody does a better job with his team than Matt Sisley. They've had a very young basketball team. I don't think they have a senior, and they've got some really good players. They just have one loss. They have guys that you'll remember, Devin Murder, a great scorer, a great shooter, Dean's son. He plays very well at a high level for Heritage Hills. Sam Sherry plays the point. He never turns it over, hits free throws, runs the team. They're a very good team, and any team that Matt coaches, they're going to be ready to go. And on the flip side of that, they suffered their lone loss to the hands of Mount Vernon and Coach Mark Hostetter. He played at White River Valley with Graves and those guys that are in Butler's Hall of Fame, if you will. And he's got Mount Vernon rolling. They're 6-0. They run a little of that USI pressing full-court deal and shoot the three. And I've heard a lot of good things about Mount Vernon, a team that Jasper's going to play tonight. So Heritage Hills and Mount Vernon, they look pretty good in what they're doing.
All right. Hey, Joe, are you still with us, or did you fall asleep on me or what?
No, I'm with you. I'm just trying to get a word in, you know. It's kind of tough.
We're not going to let you get a word in. You have to, let's play a little game. Let's play a little game as we get towards the end of the show. And
Joe does a lot of his talking during the week. Once again, he was very miffed about Tom Crean's substitution rotation pattern.
Let's get to the substitution pattern. Let's speculate a little bit about Mr. Hollowell. Is he flunked off? Is he being punished? Is he sick? You know, let's start some rumors here.
But I know, Joe, you were very upset about that. I was hoping that we could clear that up. If not, if it wasn't such a big deal, that's fine, too. But, yeah, I don't know what Hollowell's deal is. We'll see if he plays tonight against the always tough Owls of Florida Atlantic.
And what's the situation with Peter Jerkin?
What is his
contribution at this point? He's okay to play. What's his contribution at this point?
He's in line for a red shirt. He's missed the first nine. He hasn't played in the last two. I would think that's the direction they're going with him, but you never know if an injury takes place. Who knows? Hollowell might have been hurt the other night. I don't know. But
Kurt, you know, the thing about Jerkin is when he came in, and a lot of people look at him physically and say, you know, he's very imposing, and he is. But when he came in, a lot of people – scouts looked at him and said he was somebody that was still in the developing stage. So it might be the best thing to redshirt him, because I think that a lot of people that, you know, are not involved in his overall ability looked at him and said, oh, man, this guy must be a stud. But he's really in a development stage yet.
Oh, I think so, too. And, you know, when you got that deep a team, I guess you can't afford to redshirt a guy like that. But I'm with Joe. I want to know what's going on with Hollowell. I mean, he's got to help them if he's as good as he was advertised to be. I mean, there was talk about him being a one-and-done guy when he was coming out. But he hadn't played, or he didn't play the other night, so I don't know.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. And I mentioned this with Mike Pegram. Your thoughts on Zeller and Watford coming out of the overtime towards the end to go with a quicker lineup? Take your two bigs out and go with a quicker lineup.
Well, I mean, it's amazing what people complain about, you know, try being 6-24 like they have been in the last few years. But you guys know how to handle that stuff, being coaches. I mean, you know, I take Crane for his word. I mean, if they were going to, you know, switch out top, they didn't want Cody out there on an island with somebody that was smaller. I mean, that's coaching. I mean, he sees those guys every day. But I guess on the other side, if you're the player of the year and you're NBA type of talent, maybe you should be out on the floor in a tight game like that. But, I mean,
I just want to get your thoughts. I'm not saying you're wrong or you're right. I'm just – it was an interesting switch. And like I said earlier in the show, I understood it to a degree, but I don't know if I would have gone with both of them. But hindsight's always 20/20. Hey, folks, we're going to be ending the show on the live portion coming up, but we will continue on, and you'll be able to catch it in the podcast. And I do want to play a game here with Joe and Kurt as we go into Christmas time. No, we're not going to sing the Charlie Brown Christmas song. I'm just going to ask you some questions and get your thoughts. What They Want for Christmas is the name of the game. And I'm going to give you a person, and I will direct the question to one of you, and you tell me what you think they want for Christmas. Joe, are you ready?
Yep.
Joe, Matt Painter, coach of the Purdue Boilermakers. What does Matt Painter want for Christmas?
easy, an outside shooter.
An outside shooter.
Yep.
And that would heal all the difficulties of Purdue.
Oh, they're young. It's good. There's going to be difficulties anyways, but he needs to make sure he's got one coming in, and you know, he's relying on just one this year, and that one is can't hit the side of a barn. So, you know.
Hey, Kurt, Tim Tebow. What does Tim Tebow want for Christmas?
A team that'll let him play quarterback.
You know what? I don't get that situation. You bring him in. First you sign Sanchez to the long contract, a lot of money. Then you bring Tebow in. And the team's failing. And you know, Kurt, Joe, we could sit here and I could say Tebow deserves his better. You could say he's not. Joe could say, I don't know. It doesn't matter. But at some point, doesn't the number two guy on the depth chart, doesn't he get a chance?
Well,
to get out there and play and at least show in one game what he's capable of if you took the time to bring him in?
Well, that was an ownership decision to bring him in because obviously Rex Ryan didn't want him there because he's not playing him. But the NFL mentality sometimes kills me. You know, they won't let Tebow play because he's horrible. But Sanchez goes out there every week and is bad too.
Yeah.
I just don't understand. Here's a guy that, right or wrong, happy or sad, he led a team to the playoffs last year that was dead in the water. Led him to a victory, but he can't play. I mean, maybe he can't, but you tell me Mark Sanchez can?
Yeah, and I kind of get the feeling. Here's what it reminded me of, Kurt and Joe, and I'm not saying exactly, but the Tim Tebow thing kind of reminds me of when Doug Flutie was coming through. Is he good enough? Is he not? Yeah, he won some games, but we don't think he's the long-term guy. And he just jumps around, and people give him a chance, and they don't give him a chance. And I feel like, you know, this is – they do get paid no matter what. It is pro, professional sports. It's a job. And if the boss chooses you to take on that assignment, that's his decision. But it is interesting. I would say my next person is, and I'm going to answer this, Rex Ryan, and I think Rex Ryan wants a foot massage. I know he's big on feet. Next one, what does Joe?
Yep.
Is Dwight Howard of the Lakers want for Christmas?
A few wins.
Kurt, you got anything to add on Dwight Howard for Christmas?
Who's Dwight Howard? No, I don't know.
Free throws? Hitting free throws?
Yeah, he's in a mess. That whole situation's a mess. I don't know what they're going to do. They need some help.
I still think they shouldn't have, and I'm speculating. I don't know that they should have gave Kobe so much power in some of the decision-making that went on. But I saw your old Celtics player dropped 40 the other night.
Yeah.
Was it 40 or 30?
40.
For the Heat.
Yes. Yeah, he's pretty good still.
Well, when I hear your silence, I don't know if you're cringing and bitter about it or what.
No, I'm fine with it. I'm not like KG. I don't hold any hard feelings.
How about our Pacers? How about the Pacers? They're looking like a pretty good team right now.
Yeah, they're not bad. They got some pieces. I mean, Paul George is good. I like George Hill, and of course he prepped it in Indiana before going to San Antonio. And they're not bad. They're doing this without Granger. I still think they got some point guard issues. I don't know if that Collison trade where they get Augustine. I don't think he's worked out very well, but. They play really good defense. I think they lead the league in field goal defense against. So they're always going to be in games. They don't always look pretty, but for the most part, they're in all the games that they play.
Yeah, I think that they don't have that marquee player, but they look pretty solid. And if they can just get somebody to just keep stepping up a little bit more there. I think they're going to get there. So, guys, we're getting ready to end the year. We're going into Christmas. We're supposed to be nice. It's a giving time. But let's just take the opposite. Any one of you guys got something that just gripes your butt a little bit, something that you're just not happy about, something you'd like to see different, something you'd like changed, anything?
I don't know, Joe. What about
you? I
don't
know. Well, you know, I felt kind of guilty last Friday after we got off the show when I found out what was going on in Connecticut. And, you know, I wrote a blog about it this week that maybe, you know, the wins and losses and the DJ Birds not hitting the threes, you know, probably aren't as critical as we make them out to be. And maybe we need to focus in 2013 a little bit more on what's really important. I know I'll be back to obsessing about Purdue basketball on January 2nd, but, you know, that's one of my resolutions.
Yeah, and that, it was a horrible tragedy, and I, too, got off the show last week and had just found out about it, and I was very sad that, you know, we didn't know about it and could have at least spent a time saying a prayer or something, but our hearts do go out to those people and their families, and I know that the 26 who have gone on to be with the Lord, they have a comfort that we can't understand, and I just pray for the difficulty that their families and friends are going through. It shouldn't happen to anyone at any age, but especially to young children.
Yeah, and I know all of you guys, both of you guys have done work in schools, obviously, and, you know, I've done work in schools, and, you know, just used to be able to just go into schools and visit with people or go in to do your work and walk right through the doors, and it's just a sad state now that, you know, these schools got to be locked and people got to be really vigilant. And it's just sad that, you know, you guys can't send your kids to school in a safe environment. If there's one place that you can let your kids, or where you would think you could let your kids enjoy a day or enjoy a safe environment, would be a school. But we're in a different place right now, and it's just sad.
It's a different time, and we live in a great country, and we have a lot of great, caring, and giving people here. They do wonderful things, amazing things, and as Joe said, sometimes we're a little bit quick to criticize, and maybe, you know, we have to step back and look at the bigger picture. Teachers do a great job. Teachers don't fail kids, and that's what we saw out in Connecticut. They were there, and yeah, Kurt, you're right. I mean, as a teacher, I walked through those doors, and as times were changing, you had to worry about emergency plans and what you would do. And you know, I can tell you, the first thing I thought about was, how do I protect my students? And I know my son Josh, who's going to be graduating and student teaching, and he'll be going into education. You know, we talked about that the other day, knowing how you would handle the situation to the point that you can handle something that is just absolutely out of control. I mean, you can't plan and prepare as much as you do. You can't, because you just don't see something like this happening. Guys, as we get ready to end this show, you know, we're going to go into Christmas. Gosh, I've loved all the shows we've had up to this point. We've had great guests. We've had great people come on. We've had some more callers and questions coming in, and I hope that as we go into the new year, we'll continue to grow as a show and develop. And Kurt, I really appreciate you being a part of the Coach K and Joe show and our growth.
Well, I appreciate it. It's always fun to visit with you guys, and what's great is all the guests and all the people that contribute. You know, they bring a lot of different things to the table, and this show is just unbelievable, the way it touches a lot of different things, and, you know, it's something for everybody, and in this day and age, that's usually not the case. So, yeah, I'm really happy to be a part of it. I know you guys worked hard on it and tried to get it going, and it's only going to go get better from here, so it's really neat.
And Joe, I think your present or check's in the mail to Kurt, right?
Yeah, it's in the mail.
Just lay off the IU substitution pattern.
Hey, and get off my case about the reversible jacket stuff. I've always been a Notre Dame football fan. Even when they were terrible, I was a Notre Dame football fan.
I can't help it.
You're on my case, Joe.
I got a little hate mail from that one last week, and
the problem that we're dealing with here. People like that, they just want to take the easy route and reversible jacket.
I got to live in double D shoes for a little bit there. I got some hate mail, so I'll try to
trust me. If you do this long enough, Joe, you'll get some more. So I told you.
Oh, it is like coaching. I mean, it's so funny, and you hear people talk about coaches and what a great job they did, and I can remember when a lot of them were in it and how bad a job people said they did. So, but I can tell anybody, if you coach and you teach, and even a fan, if you care about the team and you care about who you're rooting for, hey, it's okay. You know, it's better to be – at least if they're criticizing you, they're listening to you, Joe. And that's better than me, because I don't listen to you, so I couldn't criticize you.
That's good.
Joe, a reversible jacket is someone that roots for what? How does that go?
Notre Dame football and IU basketball.
That's the
origin of it, but there's all kinds. Someone I know that's a Purdue basketball fan and a Notre Dame football fan.
Yeah.
I know there is a gentleman in Southern Indiana. He's on social media. He's an Alabama football fan and a Kentucky basketball fan. That's a great life. You never suffer any strife. I mean, it's great. I'm a Yankee fan, too.
What I tell people, I told people this week, I got a lot of comments about it, was, if you want the glory of IU basketball, you have to take the IU football as well.
I'm not an IU football fan at the top of the ladder. I like IU football, but I have been since I've been 7 years old, a Notre Dame football fan.
You got to take the good and the bad. You got to
choose. Well, I did. Notre Dame had their struggles, believe me.
Next week, we won a decision. You're either becoming a Notre Dame basketball fan or an IU football fan.
Joe, what'd you give me for Christmas?
I got you a reversible jacket, but they're sold out right now.
I thought maybe you were going to take me up to the Millhouse and the Basket Case Brewery.
Oh, I might. I'll go. Yeah, if you show up tonight, I'll buy you a Revolution.
Well, you know, maybe Kurt gets back, or later in the week, we'll get Kurt up to the Millhouse. You don't live far away, Kurt.
No, that'd be great. Of course, I'm at Modern Day tonight on the west side. There are a lot of great establishments between Du Bois County and the west side, so I'm looking forward to that. Everything else.
Tironi's, I think you're a Tironi's guy, aren't you?
Yeah, but I like those west side places, too.
Yeah, that's good. It's a good place to be.
Hey, they're not advertising, so we're not talking about them. Business first, boys, right, Joe?
That's right.
Well, guys, I'm done. I'm ready to move on with my day, and maybe I'll find myself up at the Millhouse tonight. I don't know.
Sounds good. Next week we'll have Jerry Palm, guaranteed. It looks like we're going to have Pete Quinn, Purdue color man from the Purdue Sports Network. They'll be taking on Oklahoma State later that day. And then we're also going to try to have Dan O'Brien on. Dan's a world traveler, and hopefully we can. I know he's leaving the States later that day, but we're going to try to have him on because Coach Kate threw a little tantrum there because we couldn't have him today after he had all this good stuff. So
hey, I wanted Danny O'Brien on. I'm going to tell you, go back to the beginning of Southridge Raider basketball. Danny O'Brien stands there right at the top. Now, his senior year wasn't like his junior year, but he battled some injuries during his senior year. But when you look at career free throw percentage leader, single game scoring, I mean, the guy had a great career, and he really was kind of a trend center in high school. He really was.
Yep.
So get it on, Joe.
He's a pretty good uncle, too.
All right, guys, I'm gonna wrap this thing up, and Joe, you can take us out. Merry Christmas to you, Kurt, and to Joe, and to your families, and hopefully we'll run into each other in the next day or two.
Likewise. Thanks, guys.
And we'll be back next week on the Coach K and Joe Show, 11 to 1. Remember to listen to all our podcasts at www.coachkandjoeshow.com. This is Joe Milligan. See you next week.
The following presentation of the Coach K and Joe Show was brought to you by Harmon Dental Care, Jasper Today, Idea Fusion Media, and the Willis Fence Company. Join us next Friday from 11 to 1 for the next show. Until then, visit www.jaspertodayonline.com or go to iTunes to listen to podcasts of past shows. See you next week.